Fish like Dolly Varden and Arctic grayling face challenges in the dark, cold environments north of the Arctic Circle. Join Alaska fishery scientist Kevin Fraley as he takes us on a tour of these unique fisheries of the far north. Hi, and welcome to the FVCC Nature Journal, the podcast for everyone who loves nature. We are coming to you from the beautiful campus of Flathead Valley Community College at the foot of the Swan Mountain Range of northwest Montana, my favorite mountain range. I'm John Fraley, longtime instructor of wildlife conservation here at the college, and I also served 40 years with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Our producer is Colin Burkhart, and thanks to Morgan Ray, the library director, for offering the library as our podcast home. Well, today we welcome Kevin Fraley, a fishery scientist who works with the Wildlife Conservation Society in Alaska, Fairbanks, and who does a lot of field work north of the Arctic Circle. Kevin, thanks a lot for coming on.
Great to be here as always.
Now, Kevin, you're down here for a conference in Missoula with the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, so we thought we'd take advantage of getting you up here for this podcast. And you're an alumni of Flathead Valley Community College. Tell us how the circuitous route you took to get to Alaska.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was a student at Flathead High School. And I ended up taking kind of an early start, I think was the program course here at FVCC. And I ended up taking my dad's wildlife conservation and management class. And it helped me kind of hone in on what I wanted to do in life. I knew I wanted to be in the natural resources field, but it helped me kind of hone in on fisheries as the main thing I wanted to study. And yeah, after I graduated at Flathead, I ended up getting good scholarship offers up in Alaska. And that's where I went.
I tried to talk you out of it, I remember, because I didn't want you to be so far away. And we drove up there. It was a 2,400-mile drive. Crazy drive up there on that Alaskan highways. But thanks a lot for coming on, and we're going to have fun today because, first of all, tell us what it's like. I did cross the Arctic Circle with you in later years there, but tell us what it's like and what it feels like to cross the Arctic Circle.
Yeah, well, it's in Alaska, if you're crossing the Arctic Circle, you're probably driving along the Dalton Highway. It's one of only two highways in North America that gets all the way to the Arctic Ocean. But if you're driving that highway, you're starting off in the boreal forest where there's lots of small spruce, and then you start going up towards the Arctic. You cross the circle, and there's fewer and fewer trees. They're smaller. And eventually, you get above tree line, and you get onto the coastal plain and the Brooks Range area of Arctic Alaska, and it's just a totally different landscape.
And so you're doing some work up there, and we're going to get into two major projects you have going on or proposing. But you got your master's then in Alaska. Then where did you go to get your PhD?
I went to New Zealand for a few years to get a PhD, but Alaska just called me back. There's a lot more things to study there, a lot more wildlife and fish to play around with.
I think I tried to talk you out of New Zealand too, but you went anyway. You just kept getting farther and farther away from me. But anyway, this whole situation in the Brooks Range, which is incredible because the Brooks Range is so remote, way up in Alaska, there's this phenomenon called the Rusting Rivers. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is something pretty new that's happened in the last few years. And what people think is it's something to do with climate change where the permafrost, which is this frost layer that kind of holds all the ground together up in Arctic Alaska, it's thawing more and more each year. And so what people are thinking is causing this rusting rivers, which is just what it sounds like. It's like these rivers that turn bright orange from these minerals that are leaching out of the permafrost thawed soils. And so that's kind of, this has been happening the last few years up in the Brooks Range, throughout the Brooks Range, and we don't know what the effects might be on fish. So that's part of the project that we're starting to study now with WCS.
And you should see this, Colin. I mean, it's our producer, Colin, is here. These rivers, you would expect to be perfectly clear because they're in the middle of nowhere, way up in the Brooks Range. And they look like acid mine drainage, and it's just starting in the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, people have really started noticing it, like pack rafters, scientists, and then of course the indigenous Alaskans that are out there fishing as well, because it can turn dozens of miles of a river just bright orange.
So this is the Kupuk River area, and the two species of fish you're looking at, mainly grayling, but also Dolly Varden. And tell us about that a little bit.
Yep, so our plan is to see kind of if these Arctic grayling are avoiding these areas of river discoloration, and also to see if they're taking up more heavy metals from all those minerals that are being mobilized into the river, because of course people that are eating those grayling, the people of Point Hope, Alaska, this little whaling village way up in northwest Alaska, you know, they worry about what's in their food and that sort of thing. So if all these minerals are getting into the water, they could be accumulating in the fish too.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. And you guys have a proposal in, right, to study this satellite imagery and the fish, I suppose.
Yep, we plan to put radio tags in a number of grayling and then just see, well, some basic ecology, because nobody knows where they spawn in this river, the Kuckpuck River, and then also to see if they avoid the areas that are discolored from these, you know, these rusty seeps.
So will you collect some grayling and do tests on them, or how will that work?
Yes, we'll keep, I think, 40 grayling, one set from a tributary where none of those seeps occur, and then one set from the main part of the river where there's four or five of those seeps, and just see if there's much differences in mainly mercury, lead, and then copper, iron, kind of those heavy metals that could be harmful to humans if they're in really high quantities.
Because they're eating them up there, right? They're eating those fish. Is it subsistence or is it mostly sport fishing? It's got to be subsistence.
Yeah, no sport fishing in this particular river, or not many, but yeah, the village of Point Hope, for some reason, they really love grayling. Most villages along the coast, they're like salmon or Dolly Varden to eat, but they just specialize in grayling. That's their favorite food. So they take their snowmobiles up the river in the winter, and they put nets under the ice to catch them. And they've been seeing fewer fish in the last few years, so perhaps those seeps have something to do with it.
And I guess it makes sense, you know, if you have permafrost melting, you're going to have those minerals released into the stream. But I'm amazed that they're that rusty red.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of that is caused by these bacteria and other microbes that just take up those minerals that are now available, and they can utilize those, and they just, those populations take off. So a lot of that rusty color is mainly from those bacteria and algae that are utilizing the soils and minerals that are being mobilized by the thawing permafrost.
So the second item we're going to talk about is this fish kills that are occurring on the Alaska's North Slope, and we're talking only 60 miles south of the Arctic Ocean. Now, you've been there, right? You were there in December, right?
Yeah, yep. This spot is a pretty crazy landscape. It's these rivers that flow up into the Arctic Ocean, Alaska's Arctic coastal plain. And so, yeah, no trees up there, just tundra. In the winter, it's this crazy landscape, just snow, you know, it's really, really kind of barren area, but very beautiful as well.
And you flew up there, and there's basically no light, right, when you were up there in December.
Yeah, in December, the sun never comes over the horizon, you know, after like the, I think, is it the winter sol? I forget what time of year, but for a couple of months, they don't get any direct sunlight, although you get a little bit of twilight for a few hours each day.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's hard to imagine down here. I mean, especially I would be worried about flying so far up there with no light, you know, to navigate by.
Yeah, that's a big consideration. The pilots will only fly or only land during the daylight hours because they're, you know, pretty sketchy airstrips up there.
So the Wildlife Conservation Study then has been studying wolverine in this area. And tell us how you guys discovered the fact that the grayling were drawing the wolverine.
Yeah. So one of our researchers with WCS had been GPS collaring wolverine up near Kavik, Alaska, on the North Slope. And he noticed that one of his wolverines, when he was tracking it, was going back to this river, to the same spot on the river, repeatedly. And so he wanted to figure out what was going on. And they took their snowmobiles over to this section of the river and found all these dead fish frozen into the ice along the river, and the wolverine had been digging them out and eating them, which is pretty cool. And they decided to drill a hole in the ice there and drop a GoPro down into this pool to see what was going on with the fish in there. They dropped the GoPro down, and what they found was there was over 100 dead Arctic grayling, a few Dolly Varden as well, and then maybe like a handful of live grayling looking pretty sorry but still alive.
Where did you take that, where they were encased in ice and they were just swimming all around and like they were trapped? Beautiful footage.
Okay, yeah, that video is actually when we came back later, and not when the fish were dying off, but kind of earlier this last winter, and we were just seeing how many fish were in this pool because we were going to go back and put dissolved oxygen loggers in this spring here to see if dissolved oxygen was what was killing the fish. And that's what we suspect, because when those fish are encased in this pool in ice, there's no like air-water interface where gases can be exchanged. With all those fish in that pool, they're all respirating using oxygen. The oxygen levels are just going lower and lower throughout the winter. So we assume that's what killed all those fish.
That is really stunning footage, that where all the fish are kind of swirling all around down there in their own little area. That's upwelling springs, right? But that doesn't have much oxygen.
We took some instruments and we put them in the spring there, and even when the water was open to the air, it was only 58% saturated with oxygen, which is very low. Usually you get 100% saturation. So that groundwater source is obviously fairly low to begin with. Then when the ice covers over everything, it goes even lower.
And there's a few Dolly Varden trout too, which are like our bull trout, but they're the coastal form.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Dolly Varden up there are anadromous, so they swim back and forth between the fresh waters and the ocean. But the grayling are totally resident freshwater, so they're probably more susceptible to these winter kills.
So while you were up there at this place, you stayed with a reality TV star. Tell us about that.
Yeah, if anybody's watched Life Below Zero, Sue Akins runs Kovat Camp up on the North Slope there. So she, in the past, has allowed our researchers, our Wolverine researchers, to stay at her camp and snow machine out and do different things. So she allowed me to stay with her when I went up there to put in the dissolved oxygen loggers in this river. And then we'll go back in April and stay at her camp again and pick up that equipment out of the water.
And I understand that the reality TV show producers are thinking about cutting one on the fish, too. Will you be involved in that, do you think?
Maybe, yeah. If the film crew is up there, and I'm also up there, you know, our main focus is our science and getting our equipment in and out. But I think it would be a cool way to get this issue out to a broader audience, these fish die-offs, because they might be knocking back populations. And, you know, of course, indigenous and rural Alaskans are worried about that, as well as people that sport fish, too.
It's incredible, kind of a juxtaposition of these people, the ecosystems, the scavengers, the fish. How does it make you feel to be working so far up there and seeing that?
I feel really fortunate. It's a place that I've long recreated in, but I've always wanted to do fisheries work there. It's just such an awesome landscape. I really enjoy it every time I get to go up there. So, yeah, and then, you know, working on an important issue like this, all these fish dying off, what does that mean? Does that happen very often? And how do the wolverines factor in? You know, that might be a really good, important food source for them in an area where there's just not much food. So.
And it's happening in the middle of nowhere. It's not like humans are doing this. It's like, well, not directly.
No, there's not. I mean, yeah, the humans are a pretty small part of this story. It's mostly about that harsh climate and the interactions between the fish and wildlife out there.
And you found a wolverine collar that had been dropped. That's one of the ways you found this phenomenon, what's going on, right?
I was up there also retrieving wolverine collars when I was putting in dissolved oxygen loggers. But the wolverines spend a lot of time near that river where the grayling are. So it was, you know, an easy just side trip to go help my fellow researcher and pick up his collar so he could get the best data off of them he could.
What a great combination of information you guys are putting together up there. So Wildlife Conservation Society, great place to work, I assume.
Yeah, awesome. I'm the fish guy there, so I kind of go under the radar, of course. Most our organization works in Africa and South America, throughout the world, so, and most of it's focused on charismatic megafauna, so, you know, fish is not a huge focus, but they're definitely a huge part of the story in Alaska. So.
But you're the fisheries, Beringia Fisheries Ecologist, is that
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So the land bridge area.
Yep, the program that I work for in the Wildlife Conservation Society is called the Arctic Beringia Program. And I'm the fisheries person there. That program's based in Fairbanks, Alaska.
So. You're a lucky guy.
I feel that way, yeah, but I always enjoy coming back down here to Montana, too.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't talk you into staying here at MSU and FPCC, because you went on to incredible things, Kevin. We're proud of you, and thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all the time we have for this edition of the Nature Journal. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Fraley, and I'll see you next time.